You're listening to the weekly sermon by the United Methodist Church of the Resurrection. We are a church that strives to know, love, and serve God as we deepen our faith. We are one church worshiping in four locations within the Kansas City area. To learn more, visit us at cor.org.
My name is Penny Elwood, and I serve as the Blue Springs campus pastor. And our passage today comes from the second chapter of James. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith but do not have works? Can faith save you? If a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, "Go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill," and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what is the good of that? So faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead. But someone will say, "You have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without works, and I by my works will show you my faith." May God add a blessing to the reading, hearing, and understanding of Scripture.
Once again, I want to thank you for joining us in worship today. It means a lot to us that you're here. Because you're here, our hope is that you're going to have a meaningful experience of God. And one of the things that we also hope is that you would become connected here, that we could connect with you as we seek to build community together. And so if you have a moment, I want to invite you just to go to cor.org/here. Register your attendance. Let us know that you're here so that we can continue to build community together. We are in the middle of a series of sermons where we've been focusing on a resilient faith, largely because the past 4 months have been like none other that we have faced in recent memory. I think about the last 4 months, and it's been characterized by this global pandemic that has changed our reality. I think about the 4 months worth of economic turmoil we've been experiencing. I think about the rising numbers of surging unemployment. I think about the numbers of businesses that have been lost, lives that have been impacted, people who have seen their houses go into foreclosure, who have lost their ability to rent apartments. We've seen total upheaval, and it's been troublesome. It's been anxiety-producing. It's a season of adversity, of obstacle, of pain, of suffering. And it's not just because of the global pandemic. We talked about last week the variety of factors that are impacting us, racial injustice, the steaming up, heating up a political scene. We've seen all sorts of things influencing this season of adversity, so much so that we wanted to talk about a resilient faith, what it means to be resilient in this season. As I've been thinking about, one of the things that has made this season particularly hard is that we've endured all of this relatively in isolation. Our quarantine started 4 months ago, and we've been living since then in relative isolation, sheltering in place or limiting our social interaction, and it's almost become too much for us. I know it's become too much for us because we've seen, starting Memorial Day, these glimpses of crowds of people risking their life and risking other people's lives and exposure by simply having this desire to gather together. Memorial Day weekend is when we began to see those gatherings emerge, crowded scenes at different lakes across the country. Those have continued to kind of manifest themselves in crowded bars or nightclubs, or you can remember the scene at the concert in the Hamptons. There's all these illustrations of people yearning to get back together, to be in community with each other, because we just can't take being alone. Isolation has proven to be hard, so hard that we've been willing to risk our life so that we don't have to go it alone. And I don't think that that's necessarily a bad thing. I think this season of isolation has allowed us to uncover this fundamental truth about who we are and who we are created to be. And one of the things that we remember in the beginning of Genesis, the second chapter, is that God says something specific about us in our humanity. God says this: it's not good that the human is alone. Which is a way of saying we need each other. We're created for a relationship. We're better together. And this is a season where we feel that, maybe more so than ever before. Even introverts in this season find the merit of community and long for community. I stumbled across this meme earlier this week that just kind of pointed to the fact that everybody has this felt need. Everybody desires to become one with each other, to gather together, to be in community instead of being apart. We're better together. We're created to be in relationship with each other. And one of the things I recognize that rests at the core of cultivating resilience, or even living and embodying as resilient faith, is the necessity for relationships. Relationships are essential to cultivating resilience. resiliency researcher Elliot Friedman, he says this. He says, the availability of social support in all of its forms, instrumental support, emotional support, support with how you think about things, they all matter and they help us in facing challenges. Though we may think it's easier to simply pick up ourselves by our bootstraps, research would suggest that positive relationships and supportive communal environments have an important role to play in our resilience. Our relationships, they're tied to our psychological and our physical well-being. The American Psychological Association, they wrote in its resilience report that the primary factor in resilience is having caring and supportive relationships within and outside the family. Relationships that create love and trust, provide role models, and offer encouragement and reassurance, they help bolster a person's resilience, which is why we cry out in times of trouble. It's why sites like GoFundMe exist, because when we're faced with obstacles, when we're faced with isolation or resistance, we can't help but reach out, cry out, call for help so that others might lend their voice, lend their listening ear, or lend their helping hands to help us emerge from whatever it is that we're facing so that we might become better. We need relationships, and we see that by how it is we reach out in moments of isolation and pain. In fact, this is what compelled me back in March to reach out to a group of people virtually. When we were approaching our first 30 days of quarantine, my life was upside down, not simply because of quarantine. My life was upside down because my wife, Wendy, had just delivered our baby girl. What was worse is that I was dealing with a newborn infant, but I also had my five-year-old in the house, unable to go to school to be with his friends. He was sheltered up in place with us, and so here I was, unable to go to Sunday worship in physical location. I wasn't able to have my same regular routines, and I was trying to learn brand new ones, a whole new normal. And we were all living in the same four walls. I was finding myself suffocating. With the people I love the most. I needed help. I needed someone to listen. I needed someone I could reach out to. And so I did just that. I decided to reach out to anybody who had ears to hear or who had eyes to read emails. And I tried to form a Thursday night Zoom call that would be a Thursday night men's Bible study because I longed to be in conversation with other men to help me through this season. And so I reached out, not knowing who would answer. And to be honest, it didn't matter who answered. I just wanted to be in community. And what I found is that a whole bunch of people wanted to do the same thing. So Thursday nights at 9 o'clock, we began to meet with regularity over Zoom. And we just started to share of our experience and of our life together. And as we were reclaiming community in that kind of way, building relationships, we began to zero in on this season behind the mask, or this season of isolation, this season that we're facing right now. And one person in the group asked a question, what would happen if we begin to look at this season in a different kind of way? What if we begin to treat this season where we're isolated from one another as a season for actually investing in building better relationships? What if we began to build and focus on the relationships that we have so that we might become better husbands or better dads or better friends or co-workers, colleagues, or neighbors? What if we focused all of our attention in this season on building better relationships, so that we might look back at this time and consider it to be the best time of our life because of the relationships that we built? And this whole group was listening to this man share this vision. And as we were listening, we were compelled. And we thought, this is exactly what we need to be doing. This gives us purpose. This gives us meaning. This gives us a pathway out of the season that we're in, into this place where we can become better. And then somebody said, well, isn't that exactly what Jesus teaches us and commands us to do? And then we began thinking, well, that's exactly right. You see, when Jesus was faced with a similar season of adversity, when he was preparing to give himself up for us and to be handed over on behalf of us so that he would suffer and die for us, he was facing this really interesting season and terrifying season of isolation, of pain, of suffering, of adversity. And before he entered into that season, he invited his disciples to gather around him, to go to the upper room, to share in one last supper. And as they were gathered there in that place, he gathered them to focus them solely on one thing, his perfect love. And then he issues this commandment for us to follow going forward from that place, because as Jesus was preparing to give himself over, he knew exactly what was facing his disciples in the days to come. He knew that they'd be facing their own season of isolation, their own season of adversity. He knew that they would be shackled together for 50 days behind locked doors for fear of what would become of them. And so he gathers them together at that table in the upper room. He seats them. He gives them bread. He gives them wine. He gives them his body, his blood. And then in John's account of the Last Supper, he takes a knee. He washes their feet. And when he rises after having washed every one of his disciples' feet, he looks them in the eyes and he gives them a new commandment. This is what John says. He says, Jesus told his disciples, I give you this new commandment that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also should love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. You see, Jesus knew what was coming. He knew what was coming for him. He knew what was coming for them. And so he gave them this commandment, this new commandment that would give them a pathway forward so they could look out into the future without fear. He gave them marching orders that said, you are called from this point forward. I command you to love one another the same way that I first loved you, sacrificially, unconditionally. No matter what season you are facing, you are called to embody love the same way that I am loving you. You ought to love one another. By this, you'll be known. The disciples were given this commandment, and they were given this commandment, and it became their marching orders. They became a way of life for them, the same way that it was for Jesus. You see, Jesus was always about love. His whole way of life, the way that he loved us, it defines who he is. Jesus' mission, his ministry, it began when he met others, loved others, engaged in building relationships with other people. The first people he met, he invited them into relationship. He said simple things like, come and see what I'm all about, or come and follow me. And he began to live with them, and people followed him. And they lived with him, and they watched him as he demonstrated unwavering acts of love to the world around him. Jesus' way of life and his unconditional love, it was like something they'd never seen before. It was unwavering. You see, Jesus' mission was to love everybody always. And so everywhere he went, he sought to build relationships, to do the loving thing. Everywhere he went, he began to meet people where they were, to bind them up or to build them up so that they could be set free by this same perfect love. And so after these first people he met followed him and walked with him and witnessed him, they began to invite other people to go and do likewise because they were seeing something they'd never seen before. They saw a love that knew no boundaries, a love that was pure and undefiled, a love that seemed to bind up the brokenhearted or to proclaim release to those who were enslaved, to care for those who were lonely or lost, to give everybody a future filled with hope. If anything, the love that they saw was a love that made them a little uneasy, because Jesus loved everybody, which meant he didn't identify really with anybody. So he didn't pander to the right or to the left. He wasn't a Trump guy or a Biden guy. He wasn't a Kansas City Royals guy or a Detroit Tigers guy. He wasn't anybody's guy because he was everybody's guy, which made everybody a little bit uncomfortable. Because Jesus' ethic of love was one that knew no boundaries. It had no conditions or strings. Jesus sought to love without conditions, sacrificially. And what he urges us to do is to love the same way. He commands us to do that, to be bold and courageous in how it is that we seek to build relationships. And he commands us this very love ethic in that moment of uncertainty as we were facing our own season of isolation, which means building better relationships, loving other people, learning what it means to love one another, helps us to become better, even in those moments of adversity or trial. Jesus was always pushing us past ourselves, pushing us to get outside of ourselves to love others. I think about the young attorney who once asked Jesus a question. He said, Jesus, what must I do to inherit eternal life? To which end Jesus answered him by sharing a story about a good Samaritan and how there was once this man who was walking down the road from Jerusalem to Jericho. And while he was walking, he was taken aside. He was mugged. He was robbed. He was beaten. He was left for dead on the side of the road. And Jesus describes how there was this priest who was walking down that same road who saw this man lying in pain, suffering on the side of the road, but passed by him because he didn't have time to stop. And then he talked about a second traveler, a Levite, who was doing the very same thing. And as he was walking down, he saw this man struggling and in pain, but he didn't stop because he had places to go, things to do. He was unwilling to get his hands dirty. And then he describes this third traveler, a good Samaritan, who was considered to be the enemy of most law-abiding Pharisees. And he was described as seeing this same person, but he had the time to stop. The compassion, he was moved to care for this man, to bind him up, to love him overwhelmingly in extravagant fashion, to, to give him a future filled with hope by caring for him to the point of hotel rooms, bandages, medical care, food to eat, clothing to wear. He was extravagant in his love, and Jesus looks at the young attorney who asked him this question and says, which one of these loved his neighbor? Which one of these embodied love? Which one of these understands what it means to love one another the way that I first love you? To which end, the young attorney could only answer the Samaritan. You see, Jesus' life and love, it constantly pushes us outside of ourselves to press on in uncomfortable ways, to endure loving acts sacrificially toward other people as our pathway forward. The Apostle Paul, he urged the early church that was facing trial and enduring affliction the same kind of way that Jesus led his disciples. The 12th chapter of Romans, Paul urges that church and he instructs them saying this. He says, love from the center of who you are and don't fake it. Be good friends who love deeply. Practice playing second fiddle. Don't quit in hard times. Pray all the harder. Help the needy. Be inventive in hospitality. Bless your enemies and no cursing under your breath. Laugh with your happy friends when they are happy. Share tears when they are down. Get along with each other. Don't be stuck up. Make friends with nobodies. And don't be the great somebody. Paul was urging this early church as people seeking to cultivate resilient faith that we must understand that we're called to engage the world around us in loving relationship. We're commanded to live and to love like Jesus, unconditionally and sacrificially. Jesus didn't conform to the world, but he was transformed by this unwavering devotion to love everybody always. And he longed for us to do the very same thing. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus, he concludes his sermon by saying this very directly. He says, now I don't want you just to hear these words, I want you to be doers of these words. And that's what today's text is all about. James, the brother of Jesus, he was urging the Jerusalem church in the very same way. He said this, don't merely listen to the word and so deceive yourselves, but do what it says. Anyone who listens to the word but does not do what it says is like someone who looks in at his face in the mirror and after having looked at himself, goes away and immediately forgets what he looks like. He's saying, don't just listen to these words, hear these words, you need to do them. And if you don't, then what you're doing is you're just looking at yourself in the mirror and then you're forgetting it the moment that you walk away. He wants us to practice our faith, not just profess our faith. One might wonder why Jesus or James or anyone would have to be so plain spoken in describing how it is that we ought to live our faith. Except that if you're anything like me, we struggle with this. We struggle with consistency. You see, there's something deep inside of us that leads us to presume that knowing the right truth or having the right information or the right position is enough. It's like if we know it, that's just enough. And what we don't recognize is that there's a gap between profession and performance. And that was true back then for Jesus and for James, just as I think it's true now. In James, what you're going to read is James urging and pointing this out to this early church. He says, look, to sit in an assembly of worship in the name of Jesus and then to scorn the very poor whom Jesus loved is to confuse correct liturgy with authentic faith. To say, I love you, but to never embody those words with daily actions, it's empty, it's inconsistent, it's downright hypocritical. For James, faith, it needs to be demonstrated in our action. For James and for me, our love, it needs to be practiced, not professed. Don't simply listen to Jesus, James says, but consider him to be so important that you'll actually do the things that Jesus says, or more appropriately, that you'll do the things that he does. As we continue reading in the second chapter of James, James writes this, what good is it, my brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith but do not have works? Can faith save you? If a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill, and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what is the good of that? So faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without works, and I, by my works, will show you my faith. James, he's pushing the earliest believers to understand that our faith is more than a set of beliefs Our love, it needs to be practiced, not just professed. Jesus is literally the word that became flesh. And what James, more importantly, Jesus longs for us to understand is that this new commandment, this pathway forward, requires that we embody love. And in so doing, we can build relationships and cultivate a resilient life in the face of adversity, but a resilient faith that transcends all seasons of life in a strong and sure, certain hope of Jesus and his love. If you believe in me, then you'll do what I do, Jesus said. It says, the one who believes in me will also do the works that I do, and in fact will do greater works than these, because I am going to the Father. Time and time again, Jesus said, if you believe in me, then you'll do what I do. And then when you do those things, my love and my power, my presence, it will become evident through your life and how you live it. If you want to cultivate resilience, Jesus says, then love like me. If you want to experience the life that really is life, then you're going to do the things that I do. You're going to build better relationships so that when you look back on the times and the stages and the moments of your life, when you endured adverse scenarios or seasons of adversity, you're going to find that you became stronger through them because of the relationships you formed during them. This is a season for building relationships. As we seek to cultivate a resilient faith, we need to focus on building resilient relationships that will make us to become better, that will allow us to become better at life while making life better for us. So how is it that we can cultivate better relationships or become better partners or coworkers or neighbors or friends or parents? And so I've been thinking about that in kind of bite-sized ways, and I've come up with some practical ways that we can focus on building better relationships during this season of adversity. And the first thing I would invite you to consider doing is to choose love daily. One of the things that we have to recognize about Jesus' love for us is that it's active, it's embodied, it requires something that we have to go and do. It's not something that we simply speak. And so we need to choose to do the loving thing daily in the hopes of building better relationships, whether it's as parents or spouses or friends or coworkers. The first thing that we need to do is to choose love daily. Every morning when we wake up, I want to suggest that you think about ways that you can do one act of love. One way that you can bless somebody. If you're married, then this is one thing that you can do to bless your spouse. If you're a parent, this is one thing that you can do to bless your children. If you're a coworker, a colleague, if you're single, your friends, your neighbors, anybody in your universe, I want you to wake up every morning and think, what is one thing I can do to bless somebody today? If we choose love daily by seeking to find one way to bless or to love somebody, what you're going to find before you even wake up and get out of bed, just by thinking of how you're going to bless somebody, will change your disposition. It's going to change your thought process, your demeanor, because something good happens to us when we think about other people first. Something good happens to us when we begin to think about how it is that we can love somebody well or bless somebody well. It is more blessed to give than to receive. And so if you're looking to build better relationships, I want you to choose love daily. Wake up, and when you wake up, before you do anything else, think about one way that you can bless one person that day. And then once you've done that, I want you to act on it. I want you to actually do it. I want you to do the loving thing. I want you to care for somebody. I want you to bless somebody. And what's going to happen when you do that over a period of time is you're going to recognize that blessings beget further blessings, that love begets further love. And as you seek to do the loving thing, to bless somebody, they're going to begin to respond and reciprocate, and you're going to experience the multiplication power of reciprocity. And you'll find that iron begins to sharpen iron. And what begins as just one act of love turns into what feels like an outfit, an attire for your life. You'll find that you are clothed in love, which is the ideal that the Apostle Paul set for the church in Colossae. He said this to those believers. He says, clothe yourselves with compassion and kindness and humility and meekness and patience. He says, bear with one another, and if anyone has a complaint against another, forgive each other. Just as the Lord has forgiven you, you must also forgive. But above all, clothe yourselves with love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. You know, I think about marriage and I think about clothing myself in love this way. I can't help but think that this is hard work. I mean, this is hard work, especially when you're living on top of each other all the day long right now. But this is essential work. bearing with one another, forgiving each other, humbling ourselves before one another, being patient. We can only strive to attain those ideals if we take bite-sized pieces first. And so start somewhere. Choose love daily. Think about one way that you can bless one person at the start of each day. And then experience, once you do those things, the power of reciprocity. Choose love daily. Now, the second thing I'd encourage you to consider doing is practicing empathy. Empathy is defined as one's ability to understand another person's experience and emotions. And what I found is that empathy is a powerful relationship tool. In addition to making possible things like forgiveness and reconciliation, empathy is also a hallmark of resilience. Empathetic people, they can endure a lot because they take the time to digest, to seek to understand the dynamics of the world around them before acting and reacting. And so because they have a greater understanding and they're driven to understand more clearly, they're able to face things without emotion, with steady confidence. Empathetic people are selfless. They have a genuine interest in the well-being of their communities. And one of the things that you recognize as the secret to empathy and to practicing empathy is learning how to listen well. Active listening is at the heart of empathy, which means we need to learn how to listen first and to speak or to act second. This is what James says as well in the first chapter. He says this, "You must understand this, my beloved. Let everyone be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to anger, for your anger does not produce God's righteousness." One way that we can practice empathy is by striving to be active listeners. Many of our conversations, they have two modes these days. They are to talk and then to wait to talk. As opposed to talking and listening, we like to talk and then we just seem to wait until we talk again. I've been given instructions for how it is that I should ever address the media, and that's with talking points. And so you listen to what they're saying, but you don't really listen. You just recite your talking points, and that gives for a good interview. We like to talk and then we like to wait to talk. And that's not any way to grow in understanding. That's not any way to actually listen. And so as we seek to practice empathy, to grow in understanding, we should seek first to listen authentically, seeking understanding. When we listen to the words of others, what we're doing is we're listening, we're slowly receiving, and then we're digesting, not so that we can echo our talking points again, but so that we find our lives changed by the nourishing components of the words that we're receiving. If we listen first, then we become measured in our response. We become full of empathy for the world around us. We grow in seeking and striving after love and understanding. What I find about listening and wanting to grow in empathy is that this is sometimes easier for strangers. As we engage strangers in conversations, it's sometimes harder for the people that we know the best, our family members, our friends, our partners, our spouses. Those are people that we seem to think we know fully. We have all the understanding that we need. We have everything that we need to know about who they are and where they're coming from. And so sometimes it's not all that easy to listen to them or to be empathetic towards the ones that we love the most. To which end, I want to encourage you to double down, to move away from surface level conversations at dinner time about how was your day. To move away from the habits of binge-watching Netflix because it's easy when we shelter in place to do such things. But to recognize that instead of fear and monotony ruling our life, what we need to coronate is curiosity. Curiosity becomes king. To become curious as partners, as friends, is a secret to becoming empathetic, but it's also a secret to learning how to love fully. When we become curious, we're always looking to grow in understanding. And I don't know about you, but I'm hard-pressed to come up with creative ways to ask new questions, probing questions, to learn more about the people I care about. And so one of the practices my wife and I over the last several months have engaged in is we purchased this book that serves as a tool, and it's a tool that gives us questions to ask each other when we are finding ourselves back in the monotonous rut of daily living, surface-level conversations, or binge-watch TV programs. And so we find ourselves once a day to turn to each other, to open that book, to ask a question that was generated by somebody else so that we can learn something brand new that we've never known before about each other. And it's not always one day, one question. Sometimes that we do, 13 questions after 13 days. And we try and find our pace because we can't seem to do something with rigid devotion. But what we are committed to is being curious and staying curious about each other, to listen to each other's answers, to grow in understanding so that we can become empathetic, which is a pathway toward resilience. And it's a byproduct of genuine love. So that second thing I want you to try doing is practice empathy. Be an active listener and stay curious in your relationships. The last thing I'd invite you to consider is to acknowledge that it's okay to be not okay. This is a hard season. This is a difficult season. This is a unique season where we are facing adversity like we haven't seen before. And what we know is that these kinds of seasons, they take a toll. They're difficult. It's okay to not be okay. This week I was reading research about natural disasters and the toll that it takes on our relationships and on our lives and our resiliency. And natural disasters like this pandemic, they highlight our strengths in our relationships, but they also expose our problems or our deficits. In the Journal of Family Psychology, they published a study that looked at couples after Hurricane Hugo in 1989. They found that more couples filed for divorce than usual after that trauma. And I don't know, I've heard a lot of jokes about the coronavirus baby boom that's taking the world by storm and how in several months there's going to be a boom of babies, new babies being born in hospitals, but it doesn't seem like that's the whole story. This pandemic, it's also taking a toll on relationships. Some relationships are thriving and they're growing, but others are being exposed and they're experiencing pain and brokenness. In China, there has been a post-pandemic divorce boom. And Darby Saxby, an associate professor of psychology at USC, she suggests that we can probably expect one here too. She writes, for couples that have healthy relationships, they are doing pretty well. There are some ways that this could actually bring them closer together, but everybody's stressed. And in some ways, this might lead to improvements for couples who figure out how to weather this, but for couples who are struggling, who don't communicate as well or don't share the same values, this is going to drive a wedge. It's going to exacerbate whatever tension's already there. And if you're in this latter category in marriage or in your committed relationships or in your family relationships or in your coworker relationships, in any relationships, if you are struggling right now, if you are overwhelmed with loneliness or pain and brokenness, what I want you to know is that it's okay. It's okay to not be okay. A part of what it means to love one another is to reach out in those moments. The pathway toward resilience isn't looking like being perfect in love. It looks like understanding the power of this kind of love. And so if you're not okay, I want to urge you to reach out, to be vulnerable, to acknowledge that it's okay that you're not okay, and then to do something about it. And what I want you to know about the church is that the church exists to reflect the love of Christ to the world around it, which means we are here to be in those moments of adversity or in those moments of pain and isolation when the world seems to be falling apart all around you. We exist to remind you of our love, to remind you of the perfect love of Jesus that is unconditional, that is sacrificial, that meets you wherever it is that you are, that showers you with an inexplicable, unwavering kind of love that won't let you go, that doesn't leave you or forsakes you, but will go with you wherever it is that you are. It's okay that you're not okay. And I want you to know that that's why the church exists. We are here for you. And so I'm going to urge you to acknowledge that it's okay. And then I want you to take a step to reach out to let us know. And one thing that you can do, a step that you can take, is you can visit core.org/next. And there you're going to find ways that you can take next steps to become a part of this community, to grow in the knowledge and love of God in a community of people who are committed to taking a class together or to be immersed in a Bible study together, or to be in a recovery group together, to be in a support group together. There are a variety of ways that we can share with you that you can get connected to community to begin building relationships as together we seek to grow in the knowledge and love of who God is. If you're looking for a group or a community, or to build relationships because you're not okay right now, or you need to build relationships, I want to invite you to go to that website and find an opportunity to take a next step. I want to encourage you to reach out to our pastoral care team. You can do that by going to core.org/prayer. And there, what you can do is you can fill out a prayer request. You can let us know what you're walking through. And that prayer request will go to our pastoral staff and our prayer team. And you can suggest or request contact. You can ask for no contact. You can just invite us to pray for you or to speak with you or to meet with you. We want to be here for you, and our pastors are here to care for you. So please reach out and let us know so that you can take that step toward building relationships and becoming resilient, cultivating at the same time a resilient faith. The last thing I want you to consider is by seeking counseling. And at Resurrection, we have counseling referrals that you can tap into the counseling prowess and resources of counselors all across the metro. Most of them are meeting digitally, virtually. And we can do so for you at free or a reduced cost. And I want to invite you to consider seeking counseling. This is a great way to begin to share safely with somebody what it is that you're walking through or going through. You need to know that it's okay to not be okay. And our church exists to meet you, to never leave you or forsake you, and to go with you in these moments so that you might be immersed in God's everlasting arms and his never-ending love. You see, because moments before, Jesus gave himself up for us. When his world was turned upside down, he knew that we'd be facing a similar experience in our life. And as he gathered us around that upper room, around that table, he gives us his sacrificial life and his love. He offers us bread and wine, a body and blood. And he says, "This is mine for you freely. So take and eat, take and receive this love." And then he urges us, knowing that we would need help carrying forward in his image, he commands us to love one another the same way. This is our pathway forward. This is how we become better in the face of adversity. This is how we move without fear into the future that God has for us, by seeking to love one another the way that God first loved us. And my hope is that as a community spread out across this entire country, worshiping together online or over the TV, that we might together commit to building Christian community in a way that transcends our reality, so that we could together experience the kingdom of heaven here on this earth, just as it one day will be. Would you pray with me? Gracious God, we pause and we thank you for the opportunity to be reminded of your love for us. A love that makes everybody a little uncomfortable, because your love is so unconditional that it includes everybody. Regardless of the vastness of your love, O God, help us to remember its personal touch. Remind us that you love us just as we are where we are. Help us to experience that love, to be changed by it, to be inspired and emboldened to seek to love others the same way. Whether that start by doing the loving thing for one person a day at a time, by listening first instead of judging, or by reaching out for help. Give us the courage to love one another the way that you first love us, O God, so that this world might be whole, so that our lives might become resilient, and so that we might all celebrate in the company of your saints and angels, rejoicing over your great love. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks for listening to this week's sermon, and we hope you're able to join us next week.